Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald Face Truth.
I'm watching major American companies for signs that our college campuses will follow in line. Boeing says it's going to resume the 787 operations in their South Carolina plant. Most of the workers will return to the facilities on May 3rd or May 4th, so that's good. Tesla employees who are asked to come back from furlough to production lines this week have been told, though, to disregard all communication and directives on returning to work. They're not going to return to work. They've canceled their plans to bring workers back. I think there are just some dramatic differences in how the states are handling getting back to work, and I'm certain that that will manifest itself when it comes time for the professional teams and college teams to get back to playing games, to some wide variances in who can come back and who's on campus and at what time, and I think it's problematic. Ken Goh of The Oregonian, you can read him on OregonLive.com, had a fantastic piece on the challenges that athletic departments are facing. It is a must-read. I tweeted it out over the weekend, and he's joining us now. Ken, what was the genesis for that piece?
Well, it seems obvious that there were problems this spring just with the cancellation of the NCAA basketball tournament, the various conference tournaments that have already had an impact at the schools. The basketball revenue is important, but it's nowhere near as important as college football revenue. So the question is, what happens to these athletic departments if football can't be played? You know, it's according to the University of Oregon, it's between 70 and 75% of their revenue is raised during the college football season, 80% at Oregon State. So what happens to the athletic departments if you take, you know, three-fourths to four-fifths of the money away? I mean, something's obviously got to happen.
Are there differences between that you see between, say, a Pac-12 member like Oregon or Oregon State and a Big Sky member like Portland State or the University of Portland and the WCC? Or are they all in the same boat, because of the coronavirus?
Well, I think schools that have football programs are in a tough spot because if you want to keep your football program and that big money source, right? So, and you have to cut something. Well, what are you going to cut? You can't cut football. You can't cut women's sports because the women's sports are mandated by Title IX. So what's left? It's your men's non-revenue sports, right? Coaches' salaries, scholarships, facility upkeep. I mean, that's where the money for those sports goes, and that's going to be the easiest place to put your hands on it.
And, you know, you point out in the piece that Portland State's athletic department budget is $14.7 million. They get $1 million for playing two games next season, Oregon State and at Arizona. They don't play those two games, they've got to really reevaluate what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think the situation's all that much better at Oregon and Oregon State. They're going to have to reevaluate too. Rob Mullins said, even in a best case scenario, Rob Mullins being Oregon's athletic director, that even if the college football season is held as scheduled, Oregon's able to play all its games, all their models for what they're going to do, none of them show they're operating as they have in the past. They won't have the income. You don't know, even if the campuses are open, which, as you said in your lead-in is a big question. But if they are, who's going to show up to the games? How many people are going to feel comfortable sitting cheek to jowl with 56,000 other people in a football stadium if there's no effective treatment for the coronavirus?
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is with us. There's been a lot of talk, and certainly on the show we've talked about the growing divide between the Pac-12, the SEC, and the Big Ten. I have wondered, will this pandemic draw the Pac-12 closer, or will it create a bigger divide with those other two? What do you think?
Now, I think the problem may be even bigger than that. I think there's going to be a real divide across Division I between the schools that can weather this financially and those that can't. I think we could be looking at a separation where the top maybe 40 to 45 schools in Division I sort of go their own way and everybody else has to back off. It's really tough for the Pac-12 now to keep up with the SEC and the Big Ten, and that's with everything going right. That's with able to play football, able to have your home games, able to have your TV contracts. There's no replacement for the $30 million per school in television revenue that the Pac-12 gets for football season. So what do you do? If you're already taking direct subsidies from your school just to operate the way things are, and things can't operate the way they are, then what happens? I don't see any options that are good options.
Ken, you point out in the piece that football accounts for about 80% of Oregon State's athletic department revenue. At Oregon, it's between 70 and 75%. Are they better positioned than others? Are they about the same? Where do you see our universities?
I think they're similar to a lot of schools. Different maybe than some of the really big schools like, you know, Ohio State or Michigan or schools like that have all kinds of extra revenue. But really, everybody's in a bad situation here because this football is big for everybody. It's unfortunate that athletic departments at the major college level are so dependent on one sport, but that's the fact. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Ken Goh of the
people aren't paying to watch swimming meets or track meets or for the most part baseball games. Yep. Those sports are non-revenue sports. They're being underwritten by the football program.
I think we've all sort of known that football drives the bus. We've said stuff like that. We've seen the revenue figures. But at a time like this, it kind of hits home that football is its own thing. And I have to think that there are some universities going, look, ideally what you'd like to do is drop some of the non-revenue producing sports, but you have Title IX to deal with. And I think you're right. Your piece just so beautifully points out that this thing is complex. It is a knot that I don't know they're going to be able to undo.
Yeah, and I think, some of the people, these are admittedly people out on the extreme edges of this, but they're wondering, why are universities offering athletic programs to begin with? Well, what's the school getting out of that? Especially if your school's needing a direct subsidy from the academic side just to operate the athletic program. I mean, at some point, maybe do you make the decision that the University of Chicago made and just get out of it? I mean, Reed College has had a pretty good history as an academic institution without really having much in the way of an athletic program. So maybe the answer, these people say, is to more of a European-style national sports program where, you know, private clubs do this. And you take what's college football now and make it a semi-pro sport and ask the NFL to underwrite it, since it essentially functions as a farm system for the NFL.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is our guest. Ken, we got some people who have called in with questions. If you don't mind, you and I can attack this together. Tony's in Oregon City. Go ahead, Tony. You have a question.
Hi, John. Hi, Ken. So it was addressed that if you cut programs to make a budget for athletics departments for schools, you cut in programs, you're going from a Division I school to a 2 school and a 3 school. Now all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of Power 5 schools that are at the lower division schools, and they're still strong schools. But how is that going to work out if someone does something like that?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the unknown. Ken, how do you see that unfolding if you've got some universities that just say, hey, we're only going to play football and we're going to play volleyball and basketball, and can they still be a member of the Pac-12?
Yeah, and I think the NCAA is trying to work on those questions now. The smaller Division I schools, the group of five as they're known, have requested to the NCAA that they relax the rules for Division I membership, which is 14 sponsored sports. And I haven't seen an outcome to that, but that's sort of what they're saying is we want to stay Division I, but we can't, you know, unless things change dramatically and soon, we're not going to be able to afford to sponsor 14 sports. So the NCAA is going to have to decide that. I don't know what the Pac-12 is going to do. The Pac-12 is, you know, there's a wide variance in Pac-12 schools, as you know, everywhere from sort of Washington State and Oregon State on, and maybe Cal on the end of really needing help to, you know, USC and Oregon are virtually self-sufficient. We don't know for sure about USC because it's a private school. Oregon is basically self-sufficient, though they do ask for money from students for tickets. But I don't know if there is if there can be a common plan in the Pac-12.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is with us. The piece that he published, why a shortened or canceled college football season could have a cataclysmic effect on athletic departments nationwide. You get into attendance, in-state students, out-of-state students, online courses. Why is student enrollment part of this conversation?
Well, for the last, I believe it's 8 years, 9 years, the student enrollment across the country, that the overall number of students enrolled in higher education has declined. So that creates a problem because the pool of students going to school is getting smaller. And it's being reflected in the student enrollment at schools. So Oregon State is basically flatlined, but Oregon and Portland State have both lost students. And when there's fewer students, then there's fewer students to, buy the tickets, use student fees, which a lot of athletic departments rely on student fees for a part of their income. There's fewer of those students to pay those. Meanwhile, the cost of education keeps going up. So the cost of a scholarship for the athletic department gets more expensive every year. I believe Oregon raises tuition. I'm speaking from memory now. I don't remember for sure, but what, 8% or something? I mean, and the athletic department has to pay that cost for an athletic scholarship.
You mentioned in the piece, Oregon State relies on student fees. The prevailing thought is that Oregon is not subsidized, but they still receive about $1.7 million from students for seating in football, basketball, admission to other sports. That's a subsidy from the student body that they are reliant upon. I've seen university presidents tweeting, talking, giving interviews, saying they plan on having in-person, on-campus enrollment in the fall. Why are they being so optimistic, in your opinion?
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know what the evidence they're using to base those hopes on. I would say it's fine if you want to do that. But if you do it before there's a vaccine or before there's an effective treatment against COVID-19, you open your campus and you have a rash of students get sick, maybe, God forbid, one or two die, what's going to happen? The parents of those kids across the country are going to rise up and say, why did we open our schools? And I think that's a calculus that those presidents are going to have to consider, and I'm sure they are considering it. You know, they're privy to more evidence than I have, and maybe they, in their states, know that the situation's better than it's being presented in the national media. But I'd certainly be concerned if my kid was a student at the University of Oklahoma and it the doors reopened, classes started, and there was a sudden uptick in the number of kids and faculty members that had COVID-19.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is with us. I wondered last week when I saw that, I saw Washington State's president, Kirk Schultz, tweet out that, hey, we're planning to be on campus in the fall. I thought that message was aimed at high school seniors who may have been debating, hey, I could go to a community college and take an online course next fall, or I can go to Washington State and take an online course. What's the difference? I'll go with the cheaper one. And maybe that's just the conspiracy theorist in me, that are they trying to hold that incoming class because they need that revenue?
Yeah, and that's a very good point and an excellent question. My brother's daughter, his niece, is wants to go and has been accepted to a private school, very expensive private school. They're trying to get an answer about what that school is going to do in the fall, because they're like the people you were asking about. Do they want to spend that tuition money for the small private school if she's going to sit at her home in Denver and take the classes online? And they don't really want to do that, but they can't get the school to answer for sure about what it's going to do before they have to make a decision about whether she's going to show up or not. And it's a tricky situation, they're in a real predicament, because in a perfect world, she'd be going to that small, expensive private school. But as you point out, why do that if she's going to be taking lecture classes online when she could take those through the local community college?
Michael Schill announcing today at Oregon that University of Oregon intends to be open for in-person, on-campus instruction for the fall term. I mean, right on cue there. Ken Goh of the Oregonian with us. What is the short-term solution, long-term solution? Is it as simple as if they can play a full college football season, most of the Power Fives will be okay, or is it an ongoing question?
I think there were problems even before this happened, and I think the whole coronavirus thing sort of ripped the cover off of the problems. You and John Weller from the San Jose Mercury News both have written in depth about the Pac-12's inability to keep up with the revenue and the amount of money the schools gain with the SEC and the Big Ten. And I think this just exposes it even more. I mean, I think the Pac-12 has a deeper problem with the fact that their sport is less popular in the states where it operates. They don't have the in-person crowds. They don't have the TV ratings. They don't have the TV platform to be able to charge top dollar for their televised games. I think some of those problems are just based on geography. That's just where they are. And the fact there's a lot to do in Los Angeles, and there's a lot to do in San Francisco, and there's a lot to do in Phoenix. It has nothing to do with going to the local college football stadium and watching games. And these cities are, a lot of them are made up of transplants, right? I mean, how many people who live in Phoenix, grew up in Phoenix, and have this great emotional attachment to Arizona State?
It was already challenging, right? Because your television is providing a great viewing experience. The cost of things were high. The kickoffs, we didn't know when they were kicking off. And so it was already challenging enough. I can't imagine stadiums, even if they play a full season, even if there's a vaccine, I just cannot imagine this not having an effect on us looking down from the press box and seeing the stadium three quarters full, half full, quarter full. I think that's going to be an ongoing challenge, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was already that way, right? I mean, I watched some Stanford games on television where all I could see in the background were empty seats. And this isn't going to help. There's no question about that.
Ken, I appreciate the work you did. It's great stuff. I think it's a story that's going to be ongoing for some time, and I appreciate you doing such a good job on it.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
You bet. There he is, Ken Goh of the Oregonian. I want your take on that. Any tentacle of that? Will it come back to the stadium? How concerned are you about major college athletics? Ken Goh essentially writing that there is no good solution here. If they don't play a full college football season, you've got problems at the Power Five level. Is this an opportunity for college athletics to sort of reinvent itself? Should the haves separate from the have-nots? I want your phone calls. 503-417-7575. Look, bottom line, University of Oregon is tweeting out today that it intends to be open for on-campus instruction for the fall term. That's cool, but the key word is intends. Washington State did the same thing last week. Kurt Schultz, the president at Washington State, tweeted out that the intention is for Washington State to hold in-person on-campus courses. The key word is intends. They're being hopeful there, and they have to. They're playing this right. But Oregon State, Washington State, University of Washington, Oregon, the bottom line is fall enrollment is a huge revenue stream for those universities, and they need this kind of messaging to hold the incoming students. I mean, there are students right now who are having to make decisions on whether they're going to attend Oregon or go to community college, and there's a lot of moving pieces to this. I know my wife has been focusing on this. I'll ask her when she pops in studio here in a few minutes, but she's been focusing on this in her That Expert show, sort of the idea that students are caught. Like, and if you're a parent of a student who is currently attending Oregon or Oregon State, I'd love to hear from you in this segment. What kinds of conversations are you having with your student about the fall of 2020? And if you are a person who has a high school senior who has been admitted to Oregon or Oregon State, I don't know what the deadline is. It might be a May 1st deadline to make a decision on your enrollment if you've been accepted. But what kinds of conversations are you having in your own household? 503-417-7575. I got a message from a father of a incoming fall freshman. Says he's going through this currently. He's got a daughter who is currently a freshman at Oregon, okay? So she's home for the spring term. Oregon has refunded the room and board and some fees, which the family appreciates because she's home. Now, his daughter misses the face-to-face classes and being on campus, but he's also paying for an apartment that isn't included in all of this. And, you know, it is a tricky time. I think if you have a student who's either a high school senior, I don't know what's the more tricky proposition. High school senior is trying to decide, do I go? Or somebody who's got a kid who's already enrolled on campus going, do I need to stay or should I come home and go to a community college? If we're going to be in online courses for a year, what does that mean? I want to hear from you. 503-417-7575 is a phone number. I've got a high school junior. I haven't had this conversation with her, but I'm curious about the conversations in your own household. Let's go to Clint, who's in Tualatin, who also happens to have three daughters in college. Clint, you might be the expert on this.
Hey, John. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What kind of conversations are you guys having?
So we actually have five daughters, three in college right now. Two are graduating. One's finishing up this week at University of Portland. Very proud of her. Another one's finishing up at Oregon State. Very proud of her.
Five.
And then we have a sophomore at U of O. And the sophomore at U of O is in a rental house. And their lease comes up in September. And they've been kind of panicked as a group of trying to, you know, like, we need to lease something. And our conversations with them have been, you're not going to do a thing until we figure this out. We're not going to get into a year-long lease that we can't break. You know, school next year might look different. It might be still, you know, virtual, and you might not be in Eugene anymore. She's currently in Eugene, sheltered in place with her roommates, doing a good job with that. Very proud of her on that. And then the senior in high school, you know, our conversations with her are, you know, school's going to happen. Let's keep it very positive because that's a fear base for her, right? We want her to go. We want her to experience that first year, and every single thing we're doing with her and the university to keep her interested. She's got some scholarship that's coming from them. Had a meeting with them the other day with a whole bunch of other freshmen in that scholarship group, and they're doing a good job with it. But behind the scenes, we're a little anxious on, you know, what's next and how do we manage this? And the answer is to be determined.
Yeah, and I think you're playing it right. And I can hear the dad in you who's wanting to kind of insulate the kids a little bit and be like, look, worry about what you can control. Because a lot of this for several weeks now has been out of our control, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in the technology business, and University of Oregon is actually one of our customers. And so we've been having a lot of conversations with their organization and helping them, you know, deal with remote learning. And you know, they're doing all the right things, right? Let's prepare for campus that it's going to be brick and mortar, but they also have to prepare better than they are today on, you know, how do we deal with a larger group of remote students that, you know, need access to, you know, say computer labs and those type of things. How do we manage that? And so everybody's in a wait and see other than let's just continue to get more prepared. The other thing that we see that's happening within, you know, higher education, state governments, cities, counties, is that there's a lot of talk about, you know, there's going to be a reduction in workforce, there's going to be less tax revenue coming in, and they're being asked to also at the same time deal with, you know, how do we do more with less? And it's a trying time for everybody.
Let me ask you, because first of all, dad of five daughters, I am like, you're the ultimate girl dad. And what is that like to have five daughters?
So to be clear, we're a blended family. My wife has two daughters, you know, a senior and a senior in high school, senior in college. I have two daughters, a senior and a sophomore, and we have a daughter together that's in third grade. So, you know, I'm just part of the tribe. And, you know, we all are, as a extended tribe, all parents involved are, you know, having all the same conversations together with our kids. So, yeah. You know, it's just part of this modern world today in some cases. So
let me ask you, if I can ask you one more on the high school senior, how much of that college experience for that you view is the socialization, is her being, you know, on campus, having a roommate, the stuff that one of your older daughters is really dealing with right now? How big a factor is that in ultimately what could be a decision between, hey, if you're going to be online, maybe it's better to be at home versus, you know, in a new environment with you know, not as much support around you?
That's a great question. She's amazing. She's been handling this really well. She does have ADHD, and so we have managed our way through high school with this. But I will say it's a huge factor. Her interest in, you know, leaving the house, right, and going somewhere else under her own, you know, quasi rules. I'm going to say it's her rules. When parents aren't around, it's her rules. It's her responsibility. She's a legal adult now. We're here to support her. But on the other hand, she's going to make those type, you know, those life lessons. And I would say it's a huge factor. She wants to be on campus. She wants that experience. She wants that. She's going through, a matter of fact, right now, I call it the incoming freshman dating, right? So they have an application or an app at U of O where they all start meeting each other to figure out. She's going blind into the roommate thing. She's not going down with a roommate that's known. She wants to find one through this the dating app. It's hilarious watching all of this. And she's really excited at that experience of a dorm, you know, the experience of maybe something in some club or, you know, Greek system or whatever it is, the experience of being on campus and walking to a football game and participating in that. And she also wants to be a psychologist, right? So she is, you know, very focused on that level of effort that's going to require her to get through school with her. I won't call it a major learning disability. It's a minor one. You know, staying focused and staying on task is a challenge for her. But we have watched her as an adult. We call it, she's starting into adult really well, right? You know, you know, that 17, 18-year-old world and, you know, managing her time, managing her resources, managing her interaction. And, you know, the only thing I can say as a dad is, and my wife and I are seriously aligned on this, our only job is to really help and our children to feel good about themselves. So that when they come up with those decisions that they have to make, at least they can, you know, try to make a good decision, make a good choice. And if they don't, then at least they can have an adult conversation about, you know, maybe why they didn't.
Yeah.
And so that's the joke in our house. I can't beat off all the boys. I can't do all that. All I can do is help my girls, you know, be confident in themselves. And I hear this message from you a lot with your kids. And I appreciate you continuing to message that out. So
I appreciate you, man. And, you know, bless you with five girls in your household. Thanks, Clint, for that. I got a message from a parent who says he's got a kid at Michigan State who is a senior. Michigan State hosted a parent Zoom call last week and announced that they were giving tuition credit and taking care of leases. They have a fund that will help pay for students to break leases. So they're really trying to instill confidence in the incoming students and the returning students, and they have to. Look, I don't think Oregon or Oregon State or Washington State or Washington or Michigan State or Cornell are doing anything wrong here, but I see the motivation. they are so reliant on those revenue streams and facing shortfalls on with their budget on their own campuses that one of the first things they have to do is protect that incoming revenue stream. If they know they have 6,500 incoming freshmen, they've got to retain them. They've got to keep them. And they're not going to keep them by coming out today and going, we're not sure if we're going to be able to have on-campus instruction in the fall. So what I have seen across the board is the universities going, we are planning, or we intend to, keyword intend. I hope that we do have students on campus. I do. But I think the reality is that the motivation right now is for the universities to hold those incoming classes. And the big takeaway...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.